Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, a not-for-profit cooperative committed to helping employers self-fund by providing data and insights to manage their health plans. Info is at the-alliance.org.
Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
The race for Wisconsin governor is tied, according to a new poll released last week. Both Governor Walker and his Democratic challenger, Mary Burke, have the support of 45% of voters in this poll from Rasmussen. We'll talk about the poll and other top stories in state politics with our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, in the first half of our state capitol report. Then, after 7:30, we will welcome in for the first time for a live call-in show Democratic candidate for governor, Mary Burke, and we will welcome your question for her. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, March 17th. Joining us first for a roundup of the issues making news at the state capitol is Wisconsin Public Radio, Sean Johnson. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
So what do we make of this poll that says the race for governor is tied 45 to 45?
I'm sure that Mary Burke and her campaign are looking at that, and they're pretty happy about it. I mean, if there's one dig against Rasmussen over the years is that the samples that they choose tend to skew conservative, more conservative than, you know, almost any other poll out there consistently. And so if Rasmussen comes out with a poll and says the race is tied, she's got to feel good with that. My thinking is I'd like to see another poll, you know. Rasmussen... Yes, they tend to skew right, but they also tend to be less accurate than other polls out there. And, you know, this is not what the Marquette poll was showing recently.
What was it showing? Do you remember?
It was 6 or 7 point gap between the candidates. You know, I'd like to say a lot has happened since that Marquette poll. And it's very possible that the news of the day, you know, the John Doe emails that came out, or, you know, you name it. Things have happened since that poll came out. People's attitudes change for reasons we don't always understand. And so it's possible that those numbers have shifted. But, you know, I'd like to see another poll.
Well, just between you and me, Sean, there will be another poll coming out in April. It's the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert poll, and we'll have that question asked, too. So we'll find out in April what... if anything has changed or any differences. Lots has happened at the state capitol. The state Senate was busy passing a lot of election law changes. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, well, definitely the biggest one that they dealt with last week in the Senate is this bill that would restrict early voting in Wisconsin, would limit it to 45 hours a week, in-person absentee voting. This is something that you used to be able to do for a few weeks prior to an election, including a few weekends. Now it's down to 2 weeks and one weekend. And under the bill that Republicans passed out of the Senate last week, it would be down to 45 hours a week prior to an election and no weekends. So this would have a big effect, you know, right out of the gate on Madison and Milwaukee, where early voting is something that the city clerks use to, you know, as a way of getting people in there.
Yeah, so Madison and Milwaukee have offered this early in-person absentee voting on weekends as well, and now that is going away under this bill. Why are the Republicans wanting to restrict early voting in cities?
The argument that they gave on the Senate floor last week was that they wanted to have uniformity among, you know, all municipalities, that some smaller municipalities aren't able to offer this type of early voting as much as the larger cities. And so that's the argument that West Bend Republican Glenn Grothman gave as he talked about why he supports this plan.
Before we have a permanent situation in which we have two classes of citizens in this state, people who live in an area in which they have polls open 60 or 70 hours a week, and people living in areas in which they have early voting 4 or 5 hours a week, I think it's time to make it uniform as soon as we can.
He actually said at one point he wanted to nip this in the bud, this being early voting. Democrats weren't exactly, I mean, basically they weren't buying that argument. They said that it's no coincidence that Madison and Milwaukee are two cities that support Democrats, and they said that what was really going on here was an effort to support to suppress Democratic voters. Here is Democratic State Senator Tim Cullen of Janesville.
At the core of this bill is the people in the outer ring don't like the way that people in urban areas are predominantly voting. And therefore, if you can't win them over with policy and ideas and candidates, then what you do is you suppress their voter turnout. That is all that's going on here, and I've watched it go on to my utter disbelief this entire session.
And this this debate got a little heated, didn't it?
Yeah, at one point, State Senator Tim Carpenter, a Democrat from Milwaukee, was visibly angry with this proposal, got up and talked about it and addressed his remarks to New Berlin Republican Senator Mary Lozick, who had actually co-sponsored some of the other election bills on the calendar last week.
I know the senator from the 28th hates Milwaukee. She hates the poll workers. She hates that blacks and Latinos are coming out.
So that was Mary Lozick at the end standing up to say,
yeah.
I object. Yeah, and that was Tim Carpenter at the end. A couple of Mary Lozick's Republican colleagues said that Tim Carpenter should apologize. He did not. If you ask, is this something that's coming up regularly on the floor, they didn't stand up and demand an apology or anything like that. They kind of moved on the next day.
Yeah. At first, it was reported that Senator Carpenter said that Senator Lozick hated blacks and Latinos.
Yeah.
And then he was interrupted and further clarified what he was going to say.
Well, I mean, if you go back in that quote there, you can hear it. He says, you hate that blacks and Latinos are coming out.
And he was going to say coming out to vote for Democrats in Madison and Milwaukee.
Right. Yeah. I mean, never came out and said, you hate blacks and Latinos.
Yeah. So. But he's not apologizing for that.
No.
For what he said there. Okay. So, what are the other laws that were, tweaked or changed?
As far as elections go, there's one that permits election observers to get closer to voters. So this bill would let you get within 3 feet of somebody who's voting. No more than 8 feet away. There's another plan that would permit poll workers to come from anywhere in a county. So right now you got to come from within a municipality. This would practically let a poll worker come from suburban Milwaukee County to work within the city, or suburban Racine or rural Racine to work within the city of Racine. And there was another plan that would permit lobbyists to donate money to candidates earlier. Right now they have to wait until June 1st to write a check directly to a candidate for office. This plan would bump that up to April 15th.
Yeah. Do we have any indication yet from Governor Walker? Will he be signing these changes to election law?
He has pretty much a stock response on bills like that, like these days. And that is, I haven't really been focused on this. I've been focused on, he calls it the blueprint, but his tax cut proposal that passed the Senate recently is going to pass the Assembly this week. So the governor doesn't say. Some of these haven't reached his desk yet. The one that would let election observers, I believe, has reached his desk now, and so we'll find out where he stands on these. But the governor has pretty consistently not given an opinion on where he is, where he's at on these.
He was asked, though, last week if he did hint, last week, that he might call a special session on voter ID. What's this about?
Yeah, and he had comments that differed a little bit on a couple different days last week. Here's the first from a stop in Madison where he was asked that question about whether he would call that special session.
If the federal court or the state Supreme Court says modifications are needed to make this constitutional, would you want to have a special session on that?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's something. Well, because I think in the end, people overwhelmingly have told us in the state they want to have voter ID. If the courts, regardless of which court it would be, were to say, we think this, you could have it if not for this provision or that provision, we'd want to modify that so that a law like that were in effect before the next election.
So he's saying there, if the courts find that this has a problem, I would call the legislature back in a special session. And, you know, normally the legislature is not in session in an election year. It can get kind of crazy when they are, and so it raises the prospect that you'd be changing the election laws basically in the middle of a campaign. He addressed this later on in the week. He was talking to Wisconsin Public Radio's Eau Claire reporter Rich Kramer, and he went a step further, it seemed like. He didn't say that if the courts say there are problems with this law. The governor indicated that the state's own attorneys have indicated that there are problems with the voter ID law.
My belief is that listening to the comments that I've heard from attorneys, I'm not an attorney, but from the Justice Department, was they feel for both the Supreme Court and the federal court looking at the voter ID legislation that it probably would be appropriate for the legislature to make some slight adjustments that would address some of the concerns that we've heard throughout that process. And my hope, as I mentioned the other day, if need be, we'd call a special session. But my hope is there's a bill in the Assembly, I think, that makes those sorts of changes. I'd like to see the Senate bring that up before they adjourn.
So he's talking about a bill that the Assembly passed last fall that would, you know, basically create a workaround for people who are poor if they can, you know, show they are, you know, basically prove that. That's not going anywhere in the Senate at this point. The Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, asked by Rich Kramer last week, you know, would you take that up? His office said no, they're going to wait until the court acts. So, you know, that. But that was interesting to hear the governor not reference something a court might find, but reference what he's been told by Department of Justice working for the state.
So the Senate's not going to take up.
Senate's not going to take it up. It would have to be after the courts act. It would have to be in a special session.
Ah, and these slight adjustments that the governor was referring to and what changes are made in that assembly bill would allow someone who doesn't have a photo ID to somehow still vote provisionally?
Yeah, and I mean, I think you could show an affidavit to, you know, indicate
why you don't have
why
a photo.
You can't write. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to go anywhere in the Senate until courts act. They don't want to move on this.
Well, let's see what listeners think of all of these political stories and others that we will talk about. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about the issues making news at the state capitol. Just talked about all of the changes that the state Senate passed on election law last week. And we do have some callers who have some thoughts on or questions about that. Mark in Rockton is with us. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. First, I want to compliment Sean. I think his voice has become very important in our state, and he's really matured and become quite an asset since he started at your station. So thank you, Sean.
Thanks a lot.
I am really so post-partisan. I'm very disappointed with both political parties. I wanted to qualify my comments in that context. I am so upset about these voter restriction laws. And the specious argument that this somehow creates a double standard and a unlevel playing field is just that. I live in a rural community between Lafarge and Ontario. It's never taken me longer than 5 minutes to vote. If there's a long line, there's one person ahead of me, then we get to visit a little bit because most of us know each other. I read the news accounts in our urban centers of people waiting for hour or hours to exercise their franchise. I'd say the only way that this kind of legislation should be passed is if the sponsors are willing to appropriate funds, so in urban centers, no one has to wait a long time. So the fact that they can vote early, and working people who can't get off work with the transportation and the waiting time can't vote, I think this is a really, really disingenuous initiative.
Thank you very much, Mark. So are people or officials in small towns clamoring about this unlevel playing field, Sean?
The election officials haven't asked for it. I mean, they're not pushing for the changes. You talk about putting money behind it. The Senate did amend the plan last week so that it would cover, I think, 50% of the costs of any new people you bring on to deal with absentee ballots. That actually could set up, I don't know what the assembly is going to do, but if they don't agree with that, or if they, because it's what's called the sum sufficient appropriation, basically says the state will spend as much money as it takes to, meet that objective. If the assembly doesn't like that, it could actually set up a situation where they knock it back to the Senate and they both have to pass it again. But, we'll see what happens there. There's only a couple weeks or a few weeks left in the legislative session, so time's running out on all these bills.
Well, let's talk about another bill that is not going to see a vote, according to your reporting and press accounts, having to do with oral chemotherapy. What's going on here?
Yeah, this is a pretty interesting bill, and what it would do is say that any insurance plan that covers chemotherapy has to charge the same rate for chemotherapy delivered through a pill as it does through chemotherapy delivered, through an IV, the way that you'd traditionally get it. So this is something that, if you look, it's got broad bipartisan support, a number of Republican and Democratic co-authors in the Senate. One of the co-authors being the Senate co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, Alberta Darling. And yet it's not coming up for a vote. And you actually had a curious situation last week where a Republican used this, it's a parliamentary trick, really, where they put it in, they set it up for a public hearing in this obscure committee, the Senate Committee on Organization. And when it's in there, it's essentially locked up. Democrats couldn't pull it to the floor and force a vote on it. Senator Scott Fitzgerald, the Republican majority leader in the Senate, was asked about it by reporters afterward. And he, basically conceded that if this thing came up for a vote in the Senate, it would probably pass.
There's probably enough votes in the Senate to pass it, but that's not the issue. We have people that feel very strong about these health care mandate bills, and they object to them. So that's what's going on with this bill right now.
So, it's not terribly unusual for that to happen in the legislature. It happens that you have bills that have popular support or have enough bipartisan support to pass and they never go anywhere because, because you have the party in charge, their members can't all get on the same page. But this is one where, it's pretty easy to understand. It's helping cancer patients afford chemotherapy, and you have the majority leader out there saying, yeah, it would pass.
Yeah, is it true that the insurance industry objects to this
bill,
and that the majority leader's brother, Jeff Fitzgerald, is lobbying against the bill?
That is true. You haven't seen Democrats come out and say that the fact that Fitzgerald's brother, the former assembly speaker, is lobbying for it is the reason he's bottling it up. But you did have the Journal Sentinel did an analysis of where people have stood on this legislation in the past, and at least by their count, a majority of Republicans even are in favor of this. And so it's one of those, sort of a strange argument taking place. Senate Democratic Senator John Erpenbach of Middleton was asked about this after the procedural gymnastics last week. Erpenbach was not ready to say that this bill was done for the session.
I have faith that the bill will come up for a vote in the state Senate without us having to do any procedural motion. But at the same time, on the last day of session, if Senate Org schedules the bill for a hearing, then we know that the insurance industry owns a Republican caucus.
So that's one that you could see this situation repeat itself this session, where that committee gets called and locks the bill up.
Well, before we run out of time, Governor Walker's Medicaid director, Brett Davis, is leaving his job for a private sector job, and some are wondering if this might be related to John Doe 2.
Well, I mean, Brett Davis was mentioned extensively in that batch of emails that just came out and in the Kelly Ryan Flash investigation. I mean, she was the reason she committed a crime is because she was using her county office in the Milwaukee County Executive's Office to do fundraising for Brett Davis. Now, that the crime is not Brett Davis's there, but you have seen the governor recently dismiss people for, you know, other incidents related to these emails or related to these investigations. Somebody within his, you know, within his administration, who wrote an email, I think it was 15 years ago, and it surfaced in these Ryan Flesch emails, was let go. And so for Brett Davis to leave now, it's a legitimate question to ask, why this is happening? The governor says no, he got a job in the private sector.
Well, we just have a minute left, Sean. What's the week ahead going to bring us?
The Assembly and Senate are both in. You know, as I said, they have just a limited time to get anything done before they go home for the year. So they've got pretty busy calendars here. The Assembly is going to take up a bill that would, a new school accountability bill that would include sanctions or punishments for schools that don't test, you know, where they should if they receive public money. That's probably not going to pass the Senate, but it is up for a vote in the Assembly coming up soon. You also have the release of some new job numbers coming out this week. These are called the gold standard job numbers, you know, the ones that are based on a census of employers. And so it'll be interesting to see where Wisconsin compares to other states, where they rank once those come out.
All right, Sean, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. We'll check news, and then we will welcome in Mary Burke to answer your questions. This is the Ideas Network.